This episode is brought to you in part by our own Basic Brewing Brewer's Logbook, with room for logging the details of up to 50 batches of beer and a handy calendar where you can track your brews. The Brewer's Logbook is the perfect kettle-side brewing companion. Check it out at basicbrewingshop.com. That's basicbrewingshop.com. Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, August 22nd, 2019. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, Omar Al-Nadawi shares an experiment from his home brewing club, the DC Homebrewers. We'll compare how four crystal malts perform in an English bitter: Cara Munich 1, Dingemann's Cara 45, Karastan, and Opal 44. And we'll taste a bonus beer brewed with 100% Red X malt. If you go to basicbrewing.com, you can find archives of our audio and video shows. And if you go to basicbrewingshop.com, you can find our DVDs, our brewer's logbooks, and other Basic Brewing gear, including our tie-dye silicone pint and our brewing rainbow shirt. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Basic Brewing. You can find our show page on Facebook. We have a cool Basic Brewing app on iTunes and Amazon.com, and we're found all over the place where fine podcasts are served up. And if you do us the favor of rating us on iTunes and maybe leaving a nice comment there, they say that that will help new listeners to find us. If you want to support us financially, check out patreon.com/basicbrewing, and thanks to everybody who's helping out in that way. If you go to patreon.com/basicbrewing, you can see a long list of stuff you can access if you sign up as a supporter, including early releases to videos when they come out, behind-the-scenes videos with exclusive content that is not released to the public, and recipes for our batches of beer that are featured in those shows. Since last week's audio episode, I've posted an episode of Basic Brewing Video featuring our no-chill version of Steve's Ozark Amber Ale, which you can find at stevesbrewshop.com. It's a really tasty beer, and this was the first no-chill batch that Steve tried. Let's jump right into the mailbag, shall we? Riley from Valdosta, Georgia. Is it Valdosta? Probably Valdosta, Georgia, writes, "I've recently started my own batch of root beer to try out the brewing hobby. I haven't heard a podcast where you covered root beer yet, but I still have a lot to listen to." Riley says, I'm wondering what a good beginner kit would be to start brewing, and if you had any recommendations or suggestions for brewing root beer. Right now, I'm just using some buckets to try try things out, but so far I enjoy it and would like to start building a legitimate setup. I also found out that there's a local homebrew club in my area. Would this benefit me if I'm only brewing root beer and such at the moment? Well, thanks for the note, Riley. First off, yes, get yourself to a homebrew club meeting. Even if you've never brewed a single thing, you'll find lots of information and inspiration at a local homebrew club meeting. There will be no shortage of opinions on what kind of gear you need to get into. As for the root beer, in the past, I've just used the little bottles of root beer extract. You just need to add water, sugar, and yeast if you're bottle conditioning. You do need to pay attention when bottle conditioning, though. As soon as those bottles get carbonated, since there's so much sugar in there for the yeast to eat, you need to stick them all into the fridge when they get carbonated enough, because they may become overpressurized and even burst. For that purpose, I recommend PET bottles for homebrew, or PET bottles for homebrew root beer. It's easy to tell when they're getting tight and pressurized. Or what I enjoy doing more is kegging root beer. Now, that means you have to get a kegging setup, but you'll eventually get a kegging setup, I'm sure. But I keg root beer. And that way you can use force carbonation with CO2 to carbonate and control your pressure exactly. And there's no need for yeast, no need for bottle conditioning. And you can also use non-sugar sweetener to make a sugar-free root beer. So good luck on getting into the obsession. I mean, the hobby, Riley. Hope that helped. Now, I finally got around to brewing my Pseudo Sati raw ale. So far, I'm very happy with how it's turning out. I was inspired to brew it by reading Viking Age Brew from Mika Leitinen, whom we'll hear on next week's audio show. I'm calling it a pseudo-sati because I'm deviating from the ingredients that are in traditional sati. Maybe most importantly, I'm not using Finnish baker's yeast, which is used mostly over there in Finland, according to Mika. I used A44 Kvaiking from our friends and sponsors Imperial Organic Yeast. Kvaiking is a seasonal release from Imperial that's a blend of three Kvaik strains. Imperial says Kvaiking can produce an insane amount of pineapple, guava, and other exotic tropical fruit character. And I can attest, my pseudo-sati is not hopped and is around 10.5% ABV. I fermented it out on my porch in a plastic bucket at around 90 degrees Fahrenheit or 32 C. And even though there are no hops, I'd swear that this beer had a hop stand with lots of juicy, tropical fruity hops. Kvaiking took the beer from 1082 to 1004 in that hot temperature on the porch in 4 days without those stressed out higher alcohol flavors that you probably expect in other yeast strains. And since Kvaiking is a blend, Casey at Imperial says the character may change or evolve over successive repitches if you use it over and over again. So that sounds like a fun experiment. Again, A44 Kvaiking is a seasonal release, so get your hands on it while you can. Another exciting product from our friends and sponsors, Imperial Organic Yeast. And this gives me the opportunity to talk about our other friends and sponsors, Desiree and Dave from High Gravity in Tulsa. Last week, I think I said I was going to use 25 pounds of malt for this 5-gallon batch of pseudo-sati. Well, that wasn't right. I used 15 pounds or 6.8 kilograms of Pilsner malt, 8 ounces or 226 grams of 40 Lovibond crystal, and 1 pound or 450 grams of malted rye. Now, I have the 10-gallon, 240-volt Warthog brew-in-a-bag system from High Gravity, and I was afraid by using brew-in-a-bag that I wouldn't get the efficiency that I wanted, especially since I didn't boil this batch. You know, usually if you don't hit your gravity, you can boil a little longer, get a lower volume, but up your gravity. Well, I didn't have that luxury this time. So I mashed in the grain to 6 gallons or 22.7 liters of water, and I dialed in the Warthog controller to 148 degrees Fahrenheit or 64 C for 2 hours. And I used the recirculation pump that came with the system. You know, it takes wort out of the bottom, and then it's through the lid, it sprinkles or sprays the wort onto the top of the mash. And I also stirred the mash every 10 or 15 minutes to help with efficiency as well. And at the end of that 2 hours, I used the Warthog controller to bring up the mash to 176 degrees Fahrenheit or 80 C for a mash out and pasteurization step since I wasn't boiling. I kept it there for 15 minutes. Well, my refractometer read 20.3, which my little app translated to 1082. And I was able to collect 5 gallons into my fermentation bucket. And I was darn happy with that, especially since the Kvaiking from Imperial brought the gravity down to 1004. I can't imagine trying to brew this with my old propane setup with the cooler mash tun, but the Warthog electric system from highgravitybrew.com will not only take the pain out of propane, it'll let you do things you haven't been able to do before. High Gravity has single, dual, and three-vessel systems from 5 gallons all the way up to 2 barrels. Check them all out at highgravitybrew.com and use the code EBC75BB to save $75 off your electric gear purchase. That's at highgravitybrew.com. So exciting to be, you know, talking about both Imperial Organic Yeast with the Kvaiking and then, High Gravity with the electric system that I got, using those two together to do innovative stuff, innovative, tasty stuff that I haven't been able to do before. Oh, and by the way, I'm going to keg that beer and not carbonate it, though. I'm just going to use enough pressure to push it out because the sati oftentimes is not carbonated. It's served still. So there you go. Okay, this is sadly the last episode that we recorded at HomebrewCon in Providence, Rhode Island, but it's a fun one. I really had a great time getting together with Omar and Steve and Bob and Zot And I had a great time listening back to our conversation when I edited this episode this week, because it's been, you know, since June, July, August, you know, it's been a couple months since we had this conversation. So let's head back in time to June in Providence, Rhode Island at HomebrewCon. Omar Al-Nandawi, this is your third appearance on the show. You're becoming a regular.
Thank you for having me again, James.
And we get to meet you in 3D, and you get to actually take part in listening to and interacting with the tasting live, as opposed to hearing the tape and just interacting with me. So that's a good thing.
It's very exciting.
So what do we have here? We have something from the DC Homebrewers. What do we got?
Yeah, so our latest experiment at the club was to an attempt to try and evaluate the differences that using different varieties of crystal malts would do in a basically the same recipe of British bitter, an English bitter. We used the same recipe and we brewed it about seven times, but in each beer we used a crystal malt from a different geographic region. So one beer used an American Crystal 40, another used a German Kara Munich, another one used a Belgian Dingman 45. We had one beer that used Kara Stan, which is described as a toffee malt of English variety. Another beer used a typical traditional medium crystal English variety. And we had also one beer that was sort of a control, so to speak, that was brewed entirely with 100% of Red X, which is a specialty malt. So I have to add that the other beers were brewed with the recipe consists of 85% of Maris Otter, and the remaining 15% was the crystal malt. All beers were brewed with SO4 from Fermentis, so the same yeast, and they all used the same water profile, which went for a very simple, balanced water profile. Same gravity, of course, finishing gravity and starting gravity, with also the same level of hopping. All beers were hopped to 30 IBUs, with a single addition at 60 minutes. So we wanted the hops to kind of like stay in the background, balance the sweetness of the malt, but really leave the stage for the malt to show itself and its characters. So that's basically the essence of the recipe.
Excellent. And I forgot to introduce everybody else. It's been a long day. We got Steve Wilkes from stevesbrewshop.com.
Hi, James.
Zod O'Connor.
Howdy, everybody.
And Bob Stimsky.
Hi, Bob.
We get to drink when we hear hi, Bob.
Yeah.
So fairly simple recipe. We're just we really enjoyed the previous two experiments that y'all shared with us. So looking forward to this. Observationally, what do we see? There's one. That
can we go back through
the
which one's which?
Yeah, refresh our memory here, Omar.
Okay, so the first beer we have is the one that was made with the Kara Stan. The second one is the Kara Munich 1. The third one is the Dingman 45. The fourth one is the Opal 44. And the fifth one is the Red X. The other two beers did not make it.
Now, the third beer here is the of the ones that have the recipe that is the partial crystal malt, it seems to be the darker one.
Correct.
Does everybody agree it's a shade darker? And which one was that?
That's the Dingman 45, the Belgian variety.
We should have made a cheat sheet, because my short-term memory at this point. And then the Red X is quite a bit darker than the others. Maybe I'll take a photo while we talk.
Probably to an Irish Red, or the lower range of the Irish Red color spectrum.
Anybody have any comments before we get started? Any expectations before we get started? Zot's never without a comment.
The color differentiation is really good, and I've already done a smell check
across each one, and they actually have very different aromas. So I'll be very curious where the flavor goes to. But this, I'm actually really excited to be part of this experiment.
So am I. Okay, so let's all take a whiff of the first one, which is the Omar.
This is the Karastan.
And forgive me, what's the style of beer you're targeting?
This is an English best bitter.
English best bitter, mm-hmm. Okay.
Starting gravity, 1045. Finishing gravity, about 1012 across the beers.
The adjective that comes to mind to me is fruity.
But kind of a dark fruity. Not everybody thinks of hop fruity now when you say fruity.
Oh, that's true.
But kind of a toffee, very malt forward beer. But yeah, a very sweet breadfruity kind of. I would lean a little more towards a sweet bread, which is kind of fruity too, but more figgy, but without having a dark sherry-like notes.
Yeah, it's not, I should clarify, it's not a tropical fruity. It's not mango-y or pineapple like we're used to talking to. But there is an estery, kind of fruity estery character that has to come from the yeast, I would assume. Bob?
It tastes like a British bitter that I make all the time. And I wish I could say something really effervescent about it. It isn't plush or anything, but it's very good. And it's sweet, but very drinkable.
Mm-hmm. Steve?
Yeah, I agree with Bob. I mean, it's just a nice, moderately sweet, very quaffable, low-gravity English bitter, best bitter. It's a good example of what it is. Mm-hmm. And the malt, the Karastan, it's really nice. It's nice and light. It is a little toffee-like, a little, you know, it's not too much of anything. It's just kind of there. It's what a best bitter ought to be, in my opinion.
The mouthfeel is nice. It's fairly substantial. It's not, you know, cloying or heavy, but it is nice and there is, it feels like you're drinking something, you know, sort of substantial. What do you think, Omar?
Well, I agree that these beers, and specifically, especially I think this one, doesn't really have a lot of anything. Mm. It's meant to be light. It's meant to be drinkable in, you know, substantial quantities without really weighing you down. I think you will taste when you taste the other beers, you'll notice that this probably has the least flavor of them all, like in terms of the malt profile, it's the mildest. But probably also, it might be a little bit fruitier than some of the others.
Hmm. Yeah. So you said the malt was Karastan?
Yes.
Who makes that?
Baird's?
I think Baird's, yeah.
Somebody else might make it, but because I'm not familiar with it, but I think it's Baird's.
Because I assume that's C-A-R-A, because it sounds like a country in East Asia.
Central Asia.
Central Asia. But, yeah, so it's kind of like a Cara Brown, but a Karastan.
It's just west of Kazakhstan. it comes actually in two grades. I think there's a Karastan 1 and a Karastan 2, or like a light and a dark, and this is the light variety. We try to, as much as possible, to get the closest malts so that we're not comparing apples and oranges. Yeah. So all of these malts were, all of these crystal malts that we used were in the 40 to 50 range. We avoided using darker malts so as not to skew the results.
I've moved on to the next one. And this is the Cara Munich.
This is the Cara Munich one.
I can tell because it's written on the label there, and I don't have to rely on my soggy memory that's been sipping beer all day.
That's quite a bit different. You know, quite a bit.
In what way?
It's maltier. I mean, you know, that Munich, it really comes through, and it's a little more of a dark fruit flavor, a little more of a... Almost like that little bit of the burned part of the brownie that's really, really good. Huh. You know, that's what it kind of reminds me of.
I pick up a little bit more of kind of a dark spice character.
I noticed that too. Yes. Yeah.
This beer, I think this is a yeast character because it has a phenolic in it that the other ones don't. I noticed that on the nose when I went through. So I don't know if that's related to Carrum Munich versus just the brewing process. And I think that's kind of what Steve's picking up of that as you said, a dark spice. It's a little distracting for me compared to the prior one, which was, as you said, it had no flavor. That's such a down, like, that, I think it's unfair to the beer. No, it has lots of flavor. It's a very quaffable, drinkable beer, where this one now has a difference. And I think if you just hand me this beer, I wouldn't be like, oh, phenolic. Because you handed me this ultra simple beer and then had something that had anything else in it. it strikes me. But I think there's a phenolic. I think that's more of a fermentation over the. I don't think I've used Carrum Munich a lot. I don't think I've gotten that.
Well, I picked up on the spice kind of end of it too, but it did really hit me compared to the first one. It was like, whoa, and I don't pick up the subtleties like you guys do, but it was. I was wondering, too, because it's in a clear thing there. You know, it only takes 5 minutes and it gets skunked a little bit, and if that threw it off or not. But I can sure get the Munich out of this thing.
Yeah. My observation, I've tried these beers on the 20th, so maybe about 7 days ago. And I think the phenolic character either was not there or was a lot more muted. So maybe something developed in the bottle or because of light over the last week or so.
Yeah, it's in a clear, colorless bottle. Because someone told me one time that clear is not a color. Green bottles can be clear. Brown bottles can be clear.
Let me be clear.
Let me be clear. You're not my friend.
Yes, I remember the pedantry that people say, and I hopefully no, and that was a useful comment because you know it's a colorless glass, so I don't think it's I didn't find it objectionable. If I hadn't tasted it right next to the first one, which was ultra clean. And simple and drinkable. I don't know that I would have picked it out, but you know, it's a drinkable beer, in my opinion.
Sure.
You were breathing. I heard you breathing. I thought you were about to say something.
Well, only that at the moment. So I know we're just not really a beauty contest here, but I like the first beer better. Mm-hmm. Like I could really drink that beer. I could really like go get some fish and chips and drink a bunch of that.
Making me hungry now.
That's the idea.
So are we ready to go on to the third one, which is a shade, maybe or two darker than the first.
Dingman 45. Yes.
Say it again, Omar.
Dingman 45, the Belgian crystal malt.
Okay. Anybody want to step out on this one?
I think there is a. It's also easy drinking. I think the sugar character is slightly different. It's more candy-like, more than fruity. It's less fruity than the first one for sure.
Yeah.
Less spicy than the second one, and has a little bit of tartness. It's not sour, but it's a little it has a kind of a twang to it.
Yeah, I was going to say a tiny bit of astringency, especially when tasted. In comparison to the first one, and you and I may be using those adjectives to describe the same kind of sharpness or the same.
It's a little drying in the finish. There is a little bit of that tea bag, feeling.
Yeah, the body is a little lighter than the first one, I'd say.
I actually come at it with a little bit different, that there's a twist to this one. And I think it's very much what you guys just said. There's a kind of a dark, you said more candy-like, but I would actually say, oddly, Belgian candy, like that dark kind of, it's not a heavy dark fruit, there's not a dark candy, sorry, there's not a, like a cloying to it. But there's definitely a darker sugar characteristic, mm-hmm. and it has that little bit of a twist where it kind of, you know, it was more interesting going across the tongue. I don't know if it makes it more drinkable or not, but there's definitely more happening in this. And I think the astringency is definitely there you talked about, and I think that's the same as your twang that you reference. Because I've referenced that too. You get it with sometimes with wheat where you get this little kind of like kink, mm-hmm. as you finish the beer off. It's really pleasant, though, mm-hmm. in doing that.
Yeah, no, I agree. There's a lot of subtle differences, but these are beers that are very small and they're very light, so things don't really jump in your face. Mm-hmm. You have to, you know, think about them and, mm-hmm. and have another sip and a third sip and wait for the beer to warm up to get a little bit of better sense of what those notes are.
Right. Just out of curiosity, Omar, what was the hop that you used in case I missed it?
East Kent Goldings. Yeah.
So do you have feelings on the
ding? Feeling.
Licensing fees stop, and for other reasons.
Yeah. He's a drummer.
I became a drummer because I like to hang out with musicians. No, not really. I mean, it's nice. It's a nice, pleasant bitter. They kind of the three beers. Again, I go back to the first one as being the one that's the most quaffable for me personally. Mm-hmm. But that's very nice. I think the comments are exactly right. And Dingemans is kind of known for having that kind of little bit of sweetness, too. Every time I think about it, I think of it as having this little edge of a kind of a toffee sweetness, almost regardless whether it's pale or you know, whatever. That seems to be the comments that I even get from customers who like Dingemans. Anyway, so it's nice.
Well, I definitely got the tea bag. That thing popped. That popped there real quick.
I'm leaving that one alone.
That's my ringtone.
But maybe I tasted a little bit of like beet sugar. The sugar as you get from beets, it's a little more earthy. But I don't know. It was just something that was a little different about the sweetness of it, and I thought maybe it was, you know, when they get that beet sugar, it's sugar, but there's always something in there left, and maybe a little earthiness. I don't know.
All of these adjectives lend themselves more, in my mind, to a Belgian-style beer rather than an English bitter. Is it? Could we be influencing ourselves in the or, everybody seems to be on the same page.
Yeah, no, I agree. I don't know if I think that it doesn't fit, but it's different. Mm. I think if you like the character, then you know. Go ahead and brew it. I mean, there's no. I don't think it's wrong. It's just different. Right. I think if you're brewing for a competition, probably try to keep things as close to what you know palates are expecting, rather than to what your palate wants.
Right.
But if you're brewing for yourself and you're for your friends, I think definitely go with whatever tastes good. And this is a tasty beer. I think there's nothing wrong with trying a Belgian sugar or Belgian malt or a German malt or an American malt for that matter into a style from a different region.
I think one of the things that both Steve and I hit on that might make this an interesting thing for competition is you got more toffee, and if you read the guidelines around the bitters, they often throw toffee out, and when you're trying to like push your beer above 40, sometimes you need that bit of magic, and I might not use it as equal for the equivalent malt here, but throwing that in a little bit in the background might give you that magic toffee that you can't get unless you're doing, you know, proper kettle, kettle caramelization or something like that. It might be a way to make it pop, but I wouldn't use it at the same level for competition.
Right. That's a good point. So the fourth beer is?
That's Opal 44, which is a newish malt variety. I think this is a domestic U.S. Variety, but from a new craft maltster. I think they're called Mecha-grade malts. And I think they're from the West Coast.
Okay. Yeah.
I'll tell you what, it's expensive.
Oh, wow. This has got the biggest nose of all of them so far, in my opinion.
Yeah, and it's got the best head retention too.
That's true. Yeah, it's true. Yeah. Well, remember when I first poured it, it held on to a big foamy head for a long time.
This was definitely my favorite of the beers, actually. Mm. I think it. If you're looking for a, again, like that toffee character, then this embodies it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Yeah. It's really good.
Yeah. Wow, that really jumps out at you. Yeah, that's, toffee is the right word. That's a, it's almost to a candy level of, mm-hmm. of toffee flavor, toned down into into the appropriate, but yeah, I can remember eating candies growing up that tasted like that.
Yeah, it's like a Werther's original.
Yeah. Need your sweater again.
Yeah. I'm kind of running out of things to say about them because they're all really good and they're not so different. You know, they're a little bit different. But this one's my favorite too. I agree with you.
Yeah, I have to disagree. This is the most different of the rest of them. I mean, it stands out to a degree, whereas the four is like, yeah, it's a little bit this, a little bit that. This is like, wow, yeah, this is a different beer.
So I would say I would actually agree with James. This is the most different without the phenol aside. Right. It's almost like you used a brown sugar instead of a white sugar, where you just get that other flavor that's there. This is what pops you above a 40. Because if I were judging and I had these, let's assume I had these four in a row, and they were toned down for the differences. That first one would be like, oh, this is a great beer. And then I'd have that this one, I'd be like, oh, this is better. And there's just, it's I think it's a, like I just, I got a taste of like a really good hint at a dark, a brown. Like the bitters and the browns kind of flow in a sweetness and a darkness. And when I tasted this, for some reason, like English brown came to mind in a bitter.
It's rich, for sure. I mean, there is a richness to the taste that you don't get, I think, in the others. It definitely stands out.
Is this a plush beer?
It's very plush.
How plush?
I'd say it's a 10, because the other ones, well, you get the little bit of the tea bag, the astringency, all of them, to me, have a teensy bit. This had nothing. I mean, this was just a beautiful sweetness. It rounded out nice in the mouth or whatever. You know, it was very good. I was really taken with it.
I felt like it actually, if these are really the same bitterness, that the bitterness actually seems to be better backbone here than on the first one. The first one was sweet. Mm-hmm. Maybe this is actually less sweet and it's just more rich, because I really feel like this is more of a, to me, the first one was missing a little, like, I always want things a little more bitter anyway. This one, like, this reminds me of pubs I've been to in London recently.
There you go. Yeah, rich is a really good adjective for this. Mm-hmm. But it's not like you said a brown. It's not like leaning toward porter or something like that at all.
Not at all.
It's not that kind of, you know, brown.
There's no roast to it, but probably more of a deep, you know, malty breadiness, toffiness.
Toffee,
those, yeah, that side of yeah. Of fridge, not crossing into the toast, the roast and coffee and any of those characters.
Mm-hmm. It reminds me of that kind of richness you get from an Irish red. You mm-hmm. will get roast from that, but when you go, what's the difference between an Irish red and kind of a pale ale? There's a malt difference and there's a roast difference, and this is the malt difference.
Yeah, toffee is a good one without being buttery.
Yes. Yeah.
Wow, that's a tasty beer. Okay, now remind us, we get the last of the fly. What do we got?
Made with 100% Red X malt, which is a base malt that claims to be capable of producing beautifully reddish beers without using any specialty malts. I think it's closer to a medium dark Munich, but not exactly. It's a little different also.
How would you describe that color?
Brown.
Yeah, it's not necessarily red. I mean, compared to the others, it's redder than the others.
There's a reddish hue.
Yeah,
reddish hue, yes.
If you look at the scale on a BJCP thing, it goes from copper to brown, and this is definitely leaning on the copper side of brown. That's that reddish hue. This is actually a really beautiful dark copper. It's interesting. I get a bit of mustiness towards the end of it.
Huh. There too.
Earthiness.
Yeah, maybe.
Just a little bit. Like I say musty because it's kind of dusty. It kind of like just tastes physical on the tongue. It's got a really great malt. It's similar to that last one in terms of it's got that toffee malt, dark sugar kind of thing going on too.
Yeah, I get a sweetness in the tip on the tip of my tongue after I swallow. It's like there is a kind of a brown sugar sweetness on there. And it's not a sweet beer. It's attenuated well. It's not a gloppy sweet beer, but also very drinkable.
Very drinkable. I like it a lot.
Well, I'm very happy that it is very good because I got some free bags out at the thingy here. They're giving it away by the ton. I talked to the guy that was promoting it, and he was saying that you can use it all for straight and pass it off as Irish Red. And I wouldn't say that particularly, but if you cup that, well, I suppose with my skin, I suppose it's actually redder, than when you look like this and you go like that. But
Can you say that again for the listeners at home? You go like what and go like what?
My hands are kind of red right now.
I would say if you use it in a slightly higher gravity beer, this is at 10.45. I think if you use it in a 10.55 beer or 10.52, then you'll have more pounds per gallon. You'll definitely get a little bit more color out of it. Mm. Maybe throw in a half ounce or an ounce of roasted barley in there, and you'll be good, I think, for an Irish Red.
This reminds me of a talk that was given at PNW, the Pacific Northwest Homebrew Conference, and I think at the last HomebrewCon, where they were taking malts and basically cold steeping them to produce more concentrated malts. Mm. And that's what this reminds me of, where they took like Munich, which is dark but not that dark, and basically cold steeping it till you got like a raisiny Belgian out of it. This feels like you took a Crystal 10 and concentrated it.
So what were the perceptions at the homebrew club meeting?
The perceptions were that they are very different, despite their light character. As if you taste them individually, they're not really big beers. They're like, oh, yeah, that's a nice easy drinking beer. But putting them side by side, we started noticing. Okay, I can taste the German, notes in the Kerem Munich beer, or the Belgian notes, like Bob described, the beady or the dark, the dark sugar notes in them. And it was, I think, a lot of fun and a rare opportunity to actually try these beers side by side and compare these malts side by side. And, that's what we try to get out of experiments like this is to put together beers that are otherwise not side by side.
Yeah. Well, I continue to be impressed by the DC homebrewers. You guys have got a lot going on over there. Do you remember the brewers who brewed these beers?
Yes, the Red X was brewed by Bob Rouse. The Opal 44 was brewed by Trevor Fisher. The Dingeman beer was brewed by Mike Lastort. The Kerem Munich was brewed by Jake Grover. And I brewed the Karastan beer.
Oh, very nice.
Good job.
Nicely done without a cheat sheet to remember the brewers.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm very impressed.
Some of them left their initials on these.
Oh. You shouldn't have told.
So I just went back to, mostly because I was trying to get more samples, and did the first and fourth, which was the first one was the basic one that you brewed, and then the fourth was the one with the Opal that we all kind of said had that pop. And doing it again, the first one, a fresh pour, is really nice, and I would say nothing negative about it, but that fourth one would be like, oh, if I have a choice, I want the fourth one.
Yeah, it's my favorite too.
And given that your beer is the first one, that's a good sign.
Well, this is awesome. And it's extra awesome to finally meet you in person. And I hope that our relationship can continue in such a fun and productive way. Hint, hint. And again, many thanks to everybody who participated in this, and kudos to the DC Homebrewers, who are apparently an awesome club.
Thank you, James. It's really fun to meet you and meet Steve and Zod and Bob. It's really nice to hang out with you guys.
Well, thanks again to Omar, Al Nadawi, and all the members of the DC Homebrewers Club. Very impressive and fun experiment. And, of course, thanks to Steve Wilkes of stevesbrewshop.com, Bob Stimsky, and Zot O'Connor for the sensory feedback during that conversation. They all came, you know, we all brought in little components, you know, to the feedback of that whole thing. Very, very fun, very cool. Looking forward already to HomebrewCon next year in Nashville. In the meantime, if you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to James at basicbrewing.com or fill out the contact form at basicbrewing.com. Please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our mobile-friendly shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody supporting us through our Patreon page. Special goodies coming your way. Check that at patreon.com/basicbrewing. That's all until next time. Tell them thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dodson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.